roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What is up, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty here on a Thursday. Ready to talk some MMA with you all. It is a huge week. It's fight week. We're in the midst of it. We're just past midway. You know, it starts on a Monday. It's Thursday. The fights are on Saturday. It's a special fight card, too, with three title fights on the deck for Saturday night in the main event. Jan Blachowicz will be defending against Israel Adesanya. Amanda Nunes, she's going to be defending against Megan Anderson. And sorry, I drifted off because I was given one more look-see at Amanda's record there because I wanted to talk about the historical significance of what she's doing. She'll be fighting Megan Anderson. She'll be defending her featherweight belt there. Remember, she's a champ. And Peter Yan. John Anik will correct us on Saturday.
Don't do that.
Peter Yan, I think. Yeah, Peter Yan's easier. Peter Yan, he will be defending against Aljamain Sterling. I've been looking forward to that one for a while, probably about a year now, if I'm being honest. But regardless, it's all going down on Saturday. Tomorrow they weigh in, and Saturday they fight. So tonight pretty much starts their cuts. You know, they've been cutting along all the week, but this is when they really, really go into the dehydrate mode, I guess you could call it, and then they'll rehydrate tomorrow. But they'll cut mostly water. And, of course, we hope that they all make it, not just them, but the other ones on the fight card as well. Plus, we got some big news, some big cuts in the heavyweight division. You're not going to believe it. If you haven't heard it, when you hear it from me, you are going to be like, wow, a former champion in the UFC and a former champion outside of the UFC both got, I guess, cut last night or a parting of the ways. We still don't know all the details. We just know they're no longer with the UFC, so we'll cover all that. John Jones, he's starting to poke his nose in. You know how he does. He likes to spoil parties. He usually does it on fight night, but he's already getting in there. And maybe I can't blame him. I think he's trying to angle for big fights since he hasn't fought in a while. So, folks, it is Thursday, March 4th. It's MMA Junkie Radio, ready to go. Goz, let's cover the news first, and then we'll just finish up with a straight talk of everything going on with UFC 259. Because honestly, if you look at our traffic on MMA Junkie, it's what everybody was talking about yesterday. Junior Dos Santos, Alistair Overeem, no longer with the UFC. React.
I think what this comes down to are just guys like Conor McGregor, guys like Khabib, these guys that ask for these really, really big paydays. That's got to come from somewhere. It ain't going to come from the profits of the UFC. The UFC is used to making a certain amount of money. They're not going to buckle for anyone. What it's going to come at the expense of some of these veterans who have these bigger contracts that where when you, through time, when you start to not deliver anymore or you have less value, they're just going to get rid of you. And you know, those guys are going to go other places. But you look at a guy like Alistair Overeem, if you look at like the last six fights he's had, his record's not horrible, but you know, he suffered a pretty bad KO, and he's had a lot of those on his record. You know, we saw the article that Stephen Morocco over at MMA Fighting put out with head trauma. These are two guys that have taken a lot of trauma to the head. I think maybe the UFC's kind of covering all their bases here. That part of it I understand, but I think really at the end of the day, it comes down to a money thing and the value that you bring to the company. And I just don't know that they want to be paying these giant salaries for guys that I think Overeem is for sure a main card guy. I don't know if JDS can be a main card guy now. So I just don't think they want to spend that much money on them.
Now, Dana White has said hey, listen, when a fighter is no longer in our plans as far as them contending for a title, we really seriously look to part ways. Dana, the problem with the statements that he makes is they're usually convenient for what's happening at the time. But if we apply that one, I think that one he was applying towards Yoel Romero. He would have a point with JDS a little bit because JDS has lost. He's on a losing streak right now. He's a former champion, marketable name, but he's lost four in a row. Ngannou, Blades, Rozenstruik, gone. Off the top of my head, I believe that's number two, number five, four and five and six, four and five, and then Rozenstruik might be like seven or something. I mean, those are killers, but all TKO losses, right? He got finished in all of them. So you could maybe apply that there. Hey, he's just not really anywhere near a title shot. And then, of course, tying in with you, with what you said, economics, does it make sense at that point to pay, you know, him whatever he makes when we could possibly start grooming four new heavyweights, you know, and maybe one of those four will become the next JDS. Who knows? But one of those next four isn't ready to headline like a JDS. When JDS is fighting, a lot of the casual fans are like, oh, I remember him. He's the former champ. They don't know that he's on a 4-5 losing streak. Hardcores know, but they don't know. And those are the ones that tune in because, remember, hardcores tune in to everything. So I guess that you could apply that to him. Now, Alistair Overeem has won four of his had won four of his last five before he lost Alexander Volkov a few weeks ago. I think I had mistakenly said on another show of ours, the Triple G show, that he was on a 4-fight winning streak. I keep forgetting that he was dominating Jarzynia Rozenstruik and then got clipped at the end, you know, because he actually looked good in that fight. He was on his way to winning and he got clipped at the end, left in round five. That was December of 2019. If not for that goes, he'd be on a 5-fight winning streak going into the Volkov fight. So he, though he's not at the top of the contenders list, he's what's springing contenders to become contenders. You got to go through Overeem still at that point. You know what I mean? To get to contender status, you kind of got to get through JDS to get ranked, I would say. And then to get a little bit further down, you know, Overeem's just a little bit higher ranked and he's been on a little bit better of a run. So I wouldn't dismiss him yet as like, well, he's just never going to contend for a title because he had won four of his past five. But he does make good money. And again, with them having no crowds now for about a year, I think we've basically hit the year mark on anything related to COVID. Maybe it was more of a business decision, but you do bring up an interesting point, head trauma. Do they want to start washing their hands a little bit of the fighters that may succumb to that in the future? And that goes for anybody, not just someone who's lost four in a row, not just someone who lost 2 weeks ago. I'm not implying that at all. But could it be that, yeah, that they, hey, look, we're going to change our business plan. These fighters aren't contending. They're getting older. We basically want to, you know, just move on from them, I guess. But that would probably be what they say politically. I don't think they would ever say, we don't want, you know, blood on our hands when it comes to head trauma or anything like that. I don't, you know, who knows? But I don't think you're crazy in thinking that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that that definitely is going to start coming up in the sport. It doesn't have the longevity that like an NFL has or something, you know, a high contact sport like that, where we've seen what's happened over there in that sport. That's all going to start trickling in mixed martial arts. And I think the question is now, where do these guys go? I think the easy answer before was Bellator, but Bellator kind of has that stance that they're not going to really be accepting too many of these cases. They did go back on it for a second. But I probably believe that I think they probably will avoid maybe these two fighters. Maybe, you know, Reem has a relationship with Scott Coker back on the Strikeforce days. So that could be a possibility. PFL, their season seems like it's already set. I don't know that any of these two guys are going to land over there. I'm thinking more BKFC. One of those guys might end up there. And then ONE Championship has that relation, you know, that big following in Asia. And Alistair Overeem, he did a lot of his career over there. He's very popular over there. So it could be that maybe he lands over there.
Yeah. They got options for sure. And I wonder if other organizations are going to be like, hey, how you feeling? You know, like, is that the simple question? How you feeling? Good. You still got more gas left in? All right, let's go. Let's see if we can agree on some numbers and then we'll get you to fight. Or is it like, I'm going to give a horrible example here, but I think it actually applies. In the pornography world, every single actor has to, once a month, I believe, get some sort of testing. Maybe it's even every 2 weeks, just to always say, hey, look, I'm not infected with anything, right? Because they can have some sort of an outbreak, like a coronavirus, where like, oh, well, I did a scene with her, you know, and then she did one with him, you know, blah, blah, blah. And next thing you know, it's happened before. And so they have that. And so you kind of carry your medical records with you, I guess. I'm sure it's in the form of your phone now. You're not actually walking around with a briefcase, but you're saying, hey, look, yeah, 2 weeks ago, I got my testing and I can film any scenes or whatever. So I wonder if MMA athletes are going to get to that point where you have to show that, look, my cognitive skills are there. I get checked by a neurologist twice a year. Everything that I remembered 6 months ago, I can still remember to this day. I'm good to go. You know, I don't know if it's going to work that way or how it's going to work, but we should learn from the NFL. We should learn from boxing. We should learn from the NHL, all the contact sports. We care a lot about these athletes. I want them to make that big money, especially at the end of their career when they're making the most money. But you can't be a hypocrite. You know, if it breaks your heart when you see some of these fighters, you know, end up the way they do, some even taking their lives, look at Junior Seau, then you got to speak up now. You know, you got to be an adult and speak up now and have these types of conversations because this is the real world.
My heart does go out to them, though, because you've mentioned the NFL, the NHL. They got bargaining agreements. They've got a lot of things, some of them, pensions, all that. These guys don't have that. So when this stuff starts to spiral out of control for them, there's kind of nowhere to go. There's nobody to go to. That part is going to suck. You brought up the testing and all that. And we did an interview with Stefan Struve this week, who recently retired. And one of the things he had brought up was this infection that he had in his ear that damaged his vestibular balance. Oof. And that's what why he ended up calling things quits. Because, you know, obviously a lot of people know he had to go through that heart condition and all that. But that was something that we had, I forget what her name is, but I just call her Dr. Randa, right? I believe.
She came to the studio once.
And all these people that we always talk about, his chin's going away. What she was trying to say was there's actually a way to kind of regenerate that and get that back. But that was one of the things that had suffered Stefan Struve and made him retire.
Yeah. So let me take the baton from you on that topic. That's a great topic. The vestibular balance, I believe, is associated with your peripheral vision, your line of vision. And when your vestibular balance suffers or is no longer as good as it once was, it means your field of vision is kind of closing. And if your field of vision is kind of closing, as I'm doing here on the video, and for those that listen on the podcast, I'm basically holding up blinders next to my eyes. But if I'm only looking straight ahead and I can only see what's coming at me from straight ahead, then basically those are the only types of strikes that I can see. And as we all know, hooks kind of come from the side. You know, it's the ones that don't see you or the ones that can clip you. But if your vestibular balance is wider and now I open up my hands and I can see a greater field of what's coming, then all I have to do is clinch on my mouthpiece and maybe shoulder roll with the punch by turning my head, you know, maybe get a hand up at the last minute and deflect some of the impact, some of the force that comes from a strike, and live to fight another day, or, you know, basically just stay in the fight. And so Dr. Randa did tell us that there are exercises that can bring that back. And now we're going old school here. If you've ever watched a countdown with Ally Aquinta, he actually does one of the exercises that's good for that. And that's this board. It's this big board. I guess it would be the equivalent of walking up as a kid to the chalkboard, maybe not that big, but picture about a fourth of that, right? So you're standing in, you know, at kind of eye level of a board that's maybe 4 feet by 2 feet, I guess. Maybe the size of your 50-inch television at home, folks. I think we all got one of those or something close to it. And these different lights would come up, and you have to react and try and touch them as they're coming on. And that's what kind of gets you to be able to practice, you know, basically seeing outside of your straight line of vision. And so that was one of the many exercises, but that's one I think we can point to that some fans may have caught, because Ally Quince has been in the sport for a while and he's done that on a few different countdowns. He's talked about it on our show. But yeah, I mean, we've told a few fighters about it. They found it to be interesting, but I don't know that I've seen many people practice this.
Well, we used to take fighters not too far away from our studio where they had one of these machines. Remember, I remember Michael Chandler did very well at it. I think King Mo as well did it, but didn't do as well as Michael Chandler. I think he was the one that held the record. But yeah, it's kind of like almost like Connect Four. Picture that up on the wall, and those are the buttons, and you're hitting them. But George and I tried it as well, and we did okay. But some of these fighters, just their movements and their vision was pop, 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 pop. I mean, they were just hitting it. It's right. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, because you got to have the speed in your hands and the reaction. Because I can say, oh, yeah, I saw it, but if I don't get to it in time, then I'm not scoring points. So you have to have like the quick hand speed reaction. Some of that is just based on being a young cat, and then some of it is based on being able to see it. I mean, if you don't even see it, how are you going to react to it? So it's a really, really interesting test. But Ally Quinta's dad is the one that bought it for him and insisted that he use it, and he's always used it. So anyway, with Ream and JDS, who knows where they'll wind up. PFL's already starting up their season. I suppose one of them could maybe sit back and wait, because if there's a chance for one of them to slip in, I mean, I don't know what kind of an alternate list they have, then maybe they could. And then we know that one championship is taking off big in April on TNT, and then we know Bellator's already announced a few events, and Scott Coker has had a relationship with Ream, never with JDS, but I think he's been pretty clear. We're trying to homegrown our talent, but he did go back on what he said when he said that to sign Yoel Romero. What were you going to say?
Ally Quinta's dad, was he the one that coaches high school football? Do you remember that?
I want to say, yeah, I was trying to remember his name. Jay, right? Isn't, maybe. I think Ally Quinta's middle name is Jay, and I can't remember, but he was a really, really cool gentleman. Mm-hmm. He actually jumped on with us for a bit. But yeah, he was a coach. I just can't remember if it was football.
I'm pretty sure it was football, yeah. But we brought up PFL, and PFL season is restarting. But they're going to go with the bubble format. It's all going to be in New Jersey. And they're
Huh? It's New Jersey now?
It's going to be New Jersey.
And was going to be in Vegas.
Atlantic City and the Ocean Casino Resort. And so they're going to do a sort of bubble where before your fight, you have to show up about 2 weeks before. And I think it's 16 days or something like that. They have areas where you can train and all that, but it's to keep everybody safe. But yeah, that's where they're going to have their season.
Why didn't they do it in Vegas?
I don't know.
There's a plethora of hotels, a plethora of arenas. They have headquarters here. They have headquarters in New York, but that's not New Jersey either. Like, New Jersey's not a skip, a walk, a skip, and a jump from New York City. I mean, that's probably when you get to, is it Atlantic City?
Yeah, Atlantic City.
That's probably a 3-hour drive all told from the minute you walk out of your hotel room and begin the process of, you know, the elevator, getting an Uber or a taxi or your own car, and then driving down. Something like that. You know, you have to go either under over bridges or through tunnels, dealing with traffic. But Vegas is just so cozy, man. Everything's here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question.
That's what I had heard for the longest time. Wow. Okay. Well, you just broke news to me. Listen, anything else on Ream and JDS, or you ready to move on?
I think I'm ready to move on.
Okay. We hope for the best with both guys, obviously. I said something on Twitter to the likes of, I still feel like as long as their health is there, they can still compete at a high level. But if that's that, then we wish them the best. They both have had great careers. I don't think it's the end for either guy. And they're not, you know, they at least JDS was not going to contend for a title anytime soon. Ring was probably a 2 or 3 fight win streak, I guess, from maybe looking up, you know, and getting in there again. I think we've already outlined this many times. Miocic and Ganu, Jones is on deck, Lewis, Volkov, gone. They're all, you know, they're all there as well. You know, you can't possibly look me in the eye and go, oh, yeah, I think I can get in there. You can't. Yeah, that's I just described about 18 months, two years worth of fights, and that's without contract negotiations, injuries, suspensions, you know, and classic rematches, I guess. So maybe you can honestly say both are just out of the equation. So that's that. Keep on looking at MMA Junkie for more updates on that story. As we get more information, we'll definitely share it with you guys. John Jones was saying, oh, well, look at this guy. He's going to work on his wrestling and his jiu-jitsu, and maybe we'll dance in December. Because Israel Adesanya had said, I had envisioned dancing with Jones at Allegiant Stadium, that's Raiders Stadium here in Las Vegas, in July. And it's true. I actually got a little video with him, and he said, every time I drive by it, I picture myself fighting in that stadium, but I want to make it a big deal. He wants to break a record, and this is the fight town to do it in, you know? But we're still under COVID restrictions. I think we can have fans back at maybe 50% in July, but that's not breaking any records. And I don't know that they would – I don't know that the timelines would match up, because I think John wants to fight the winner of Miocic and Ngannou. I could see that in July. So is he saying December? Didn't sound to me like he was running. I think he was just kind of keeping it real on the fronts of COVID and the timelines of what Jones is working with and what he's working with. Because remember, if he beats Blachowicz, the middleweights are going to go, well, what about us? You're going to defend against us now, you know? So he'll have to drop back and maybe dip down and do that. So December sounds right good about right for me. How about you?
Yeah, especially if you want fans to be there. I mean, I think I said this on Spinning Back Click. Like, we've had just way too many big fights without fans. And something of that magnitude, especially if he were to win the light heavyweight championship as well, you know, against Jan Blachowicz, that's a mega, mega fight that deserves that type of setting with fans in Allegiant Stadium. I'm down with that. And honestly, I think John Jones should be too as well, because that's going to make him even more money. What John Jones wants to do is make money. I think he's done proving things to people. I think everybody pretty much knows this is going to end up being one of the greatest fighters of all time, if not the greatest, when his contract or when his career is over. But there's this little like sense of panic that I see that comes out of John Jones from time to time. And I think it comes down to that. He knows he only has so many dance partners to make money. I think it pisses him off to go through a training camp for, let's just say, like a Jan Blachowicz. I think that bothers him that he puts so much time into training, but that payoff is so different compared to maybe when he fought Daniel Cormier, right? Like, those are just bigger paydays for him. And I understand that. You're basically doing the same work. It's just you're getting paid way less. So I get where he's coming from, but with Daniel Cormier gone, you know, there's not too many people you can match him up against. When this happens, this heavyweight championship fight, and he gets the winner of that fight, that's going to be a big one. But, I mean, after that, there's not too much you could do. That's the whole reason he's at the heavyweight division, is because there's just not names that you can pair him up with in the light heavyweight division. Now, you could have maybe done that Reyes rematch. You could have done a Santos rematch, and I think people would have had interest for them, but I don't know that it would have generated the money that John is looking to make every fight.
Well, Reyes was fresh, for sure, but Blachowicz won after the Reyes shot, and John was there. It happened in New Mexico. That's when he took out Corey Anderson. And he was like, yeah, I'd like to fight Jan. And then, of course, over the summer, he was butting heads with the UFC about getting paid. He clearly said, I'm not pissed about what happened in the past. I just want to get paid good money going forward. But how can you not be pissed about what you've done in the past? What John Jones has done in our sport is remarkable, honestly. You know, that is GOAT status that he's at right now. And to feel like I didn't get paid what maybe some of these other cats have picked up, that's got to hurt. Does he look in the mirror and go, how much of that was on me? Does he look at the division and go, how much was it on these jokers? Was I too dominant? You know, did the time away, my own suspensions, you know, did that hurt? Or the fact that I maybe pissed people off, you know, for things I say? I don't know. But I think one thing that was really, really gnawing at him is here he has this most incredible resume, and yet he's only involved in GOAT talk, Mount Rushmore talk. He's always got to hear Khabib's name, GSP's name, soon to be Izzy's name. You know what I mean? It's never like, well, it's Jones. Now who? You know, like who's the second tier? I think that's what he wanted to hear. And so when he doesn't hear it, he's like, well, what do I got to do? Because he's had a lot of great moments in the octagon. For one, he's tied Demetrius Johnson with the most title defenses at 11. He didn't do them consecutively, but he does have 11. He's been involved in like 15 title wins, because when you win the title, it's obviously a win in a title fight. When you defend it, it's a win. It's a title defense. But when you win the title, you didn't defend. So the times that he was suspended or whatever and he had to reclaim titles, that's why that number's so high. He's never lost, except for that technical loss that you could feel however you want about it. I feel like he did do an illegal strike from what you read the definition. But did it impact the fight? Like, was it headed in Matt Hamill's direction? No, of course not. So the people that look at him as undefeated, I'm fine with that. The people that say, nope, an L's an L, I'm fine with that, whatever. So now he wants to go up to heavyweight and possibly win this title. I still feel like he should have defended that. He should have kept the light heavyweight title and then went about his business as a heavyweight, but he decided to do it another way. So on Saturday night, Israel Adesanya might have two belts while John Jones has none. And John Jones won't be able to have one until sometime this summer. And that's got a gnaw at him. And then Israel Adesanya says he's got a special announcement. What if he says, yep, you know how I told you guys I want to fight Miocic? I'd still like to fight him. And what if the UFC says, geez, that would be bigger than John Jones challenging Stipe Miocic if Miocic were to win? Who knows? You know, because the UFC doesn't seem to be loyal to anything other than what makes them the most money. So that would be interesting. You know, if Israel Adesanya were to win and say, I want the winner of Miocic and Ngannou, that would be something else. And think about if he just said it, how much it would sting John. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
Even if he wasn't serious, just saying it would sting John.
But the problem is John Jones put himself in that situation, right, by giving up his belt. He's the one that put himself in that situation. He should know, the same way you know, that the UFC is going to do what makes them the most money. And sometimes some of these little things work in the favor of negotiations, right? Well, I don't know, John, you seem like you want a lot of money, and we got this Izzy guy here, and he said he'll do it. You know, that we do that in our everyday lives. So I got to imagine the UFC's doing things like that. You're right. Just hearing it, I think, would really piss him off. But, man, I really hope Izzy doesn't do something like that. I mean, he's going to be really small compared to somebody like
But imagine the historical significance of being undefeated and winning three titles. He could probably retire right then and there if he wants.
Ah, dude, I don't know, man.
That's almost untouchable. But I hate saying that word because it seems like every record isn't safe, with the exception of maybe Cy Young's for most wins in pitching. Or, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's a few others out there, but that would be pretty damn amazing, you know. I don't know. This is what makes my mind go crazy thinking about it, but I'm excited to think about these possibilities. Now, let's say John gets next and fights the winner of Ngannou and Miocic and wins it, and then you have the champ challenging John Jones at heavyweight. That might be the biggest fight in the history of the UFC, deserving of for sure being in a stadium. Two guys still in their prime. I mean, John's a little older now, but I think you could still say, you know, he hasn't lost. So he's had some close ones, but he hasn't lost. And if he can beat Miocic and Ngannou, how can we even say, oh, yeah, the decline's there? You know, he was getting challenged pretty good at light heavyweight, but he just took out either Miocic or Ngannou. Again, I'm picturing if that were to happen, you know, would Izzy want to do that? Or would Izzy say, hey, you're the heavyweight champ, I'm the middleweight champ, come back down to 205 and let's smash in the middle somewhere?
That's what I was going to say. Do you really want to see that fight? I wouldn't want to see that fight. To me, it wouldn't really prove much. If anything, I can barely tolerate them meeting at light heavyweight. You know what I mean? Like, one guy's a middleweight, the other guy's a light heavyweight. When you look at them, there is a size disparity between the two of them. With John going up to heavyweight, I mean, that to me wouldn't really prove much. I think John's got to go to light heavyweight. I think they need to do it there if they're going to do it.
Yeah. Well, that's probably what John would push, because he would want to be a champ. So anyway, to tie in what I was saying, John has to wonder, why isn't it always me? And then the rest get talked about who's number two. I think he feels that. Why is it always me and Cejudo, or me and GSP, or me and Anderson, or me and Fayler? Why isn't it me? And then you all talk about who's number two. But if he grabs that, you can say he's a champ, not a simultaneous champ, but he's got a guy that's won two titles and two divisions. He would join very elite company there. If he gets a title defense as a heavyweight, he can join even more elite company, meaning champs who defended in both divisions. And then if he can hang an L on Izzy, you know, when you can hang an L on another guy that's a go, then that's, you know, you at least shut them out of the conversation. So I think John's got to be picturing how I want things to go, and then Izzy's got to be picturing how he wants things to go. Now, I think what they both want is part of the pay-per-view. You get it for sure in your contract when you're a champion. But I think when you're a big-name fighter, you get it regardless. I think a few guys have been able to negotiate that. Probably Masvidal and McGregor come to mind. Probably Rousey when she challenged Nunes. I'm sure she said, I get a cut of the pay-per-view. I'm not showing up for 200 and 200. You know, I mean, these fighters know their value at that point. But as long as they can sort out the money, with those two, I'm sure there might be something as far as A side, B side, you know, but usually the champion walks out last. So I think that would be figured out nicely. But there's some possibilities, man. There's some possibilities where they could maybe run it back in two divisions if they're both successful. But Izzy's got to beat Blachowicz. Jones has to beat the winner of Ngannou and Miocic. Some may even say fools. Neither guy is going to win those matchups. And others might say, oh, yeah, I can see them winning. So, but hey, it's kind of fun to daydream about all this, right?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the fights that are taking place on Saturday. First of all, I want to say we won't be having a watch along on Saturday. We're going to gear up for the one on March 27th, UFC 260. So we can tell you right now that one's happening. That one has Stipe Miocic versus Francis Ngannou and Alexander Volkanovski versus Brian Ortega. But this Saturday, we won't have a watch along. So it goes, we got to figure out what we're going to do. I don't know, that it's been a while since we've had a free pay-per-view Saturday, meaning us are free to do whatever we want. But I definitely will be parked in front of the television watching it somewhere. Maybe even the Apex Center. I don't know. You think we can get in there?
Today's Thursday? No, probably not.
You don't have any strings to pull? Any favors to cash?
I mean, there's one, but I mean, we're talking about Santa Claus. Like, that guy can make a lot of things happen. So I feel like if I'm ever gonna pull that string, I think it's gonna have to do with.
I mean, all we want to do is just sit in two seats. I mean, we can sit together because we're in the same household. But I don't believe it's packed. And as long as we pass, then the test. But the thing is, do you have to quarantine, or do they give you that instant test where you're like 15 minutes, go?
Nah, I think you got to quarantine and all that. For me, I think you know who I'm talking about. The one, that string, I would do it for. I've always wanted to sit with that individual for a UNLV basketball game, where he sits and where he does his thing.
Mm-hmm.
That would be one of my. That's on my bucket list thing that I showed you.
Got it. All right. Well, so now that we got that no watch along for Saturday, you know, of course, keep it locked on MMA Junkie and Goes and I will be watching the fights. We'll be active on social media wherever we are. We got three title fights. As of this moment, we have three title fights. Let's start with the first one. Peter Yan versus Aljamain Sterling. About even money in any casino you walk into. Both have been slightly favored. Underdogs, they go back and forth. I'm just calling it a coin flip, a flip them, a pick them, excuse me. What are you most excited about this fight? I'm not even going to ask you who you think's going to win, because we've talked about that a little bit. And there's people far better at the actual mechanical breakdowns, like our colleague Dan Tom. Check him out. Check out his podcast, Protect Your Neck. Check out his breakdowns on our website. And, of course, you can always get our picks, just who's going to win. You can get that on the MMA Junkie staff picks. The whole staff is there. Goes as a former champion, so it's not like he sucks at it. But, yeah, tell me what you're looking at in this fight. What interests you the most?
Well, somebody's got to eat crow, right? There's been a lot of smack being talked back and forth. Really? But here's the thing. Like, I think people would point at Aljamain Sterling and go, yeah, guy's been talking a lot of smack. But really, when you break down what the guy's saying, he ain't lying. He's not making shit up. Aljamain Sterling's a tough out for anyone, dude. This is going to be a nightmare of a fight for Peter Yan. And I think Peter Yan, he's still one of those guys, kind of like Volkanovski, where we're like, yeah, we know they're good, but are they great? Right? We don't know that just yet. So I think a fight like this with Aljamain Sterling is going to tell us a lot, because Aljo just gives everybody fits, whether it's on the ground, whether it's standing up. The dude is tough and he's still getting better with every fight. And he's adding new wrinkles. You know, now he lives part-time out here in Vegas. So he's working a little bit with Eric Nixick and the gang at Extreme Couture. The dude constantly tries to make himself better. So for me, this is the main event. This is the fight that I'm looking forward to the most.
Yeah, Peter Yan's been incredible, honestly. I felt like Aljamain Sterling was always in the lead in terms of the pecking order, the champion, the title aspirations, contender status, whatever you want to call it. And somehow along the way, Peter Yan just passed him. I couldn't figure out why. But look, the dude is 15-1, and he's just been on an incredible tear. He's won like his last 10 fights. In the UFC, he's undefeated. These are the fighters he's beaten: Teruto Ishihara, Jin Su Song, Douglas Silva de Andrade, John Dodson. Around that time, we started taking him serious. Then he beat Jimmy Rivera, goes. And Jimmy Rivera at the time, remember, he started off either 20-1 or 21-1 in his career. Until he met up with Marlon Moraes. And since then, he's kind of been on a 2-4 run, right? But before that, he was 21-1. It looked like Moraes, then Sterling, then Yan got a piece of Jimmy Rivera. But that's when Peter Yan's stock went up, is when he beat Jimmy Rivera. And then he beat Uriah Faber and Jose Aldo. I think two guys who are legends, who are Hall of Fame, future Hall of Famers, but past their prime. And therefore, now he's getting a guy that's a clear number one contender, a guy that maybe should have got the title fight before him. And this is the test where Peter Yan shows us, holy cow, he really is a big deal, bigger than we thought, you know? But Peter and company, meaning his team, his coaches, his managers, they have to understand how us fans and media feel about this. Again, I think I just gave a proper run through of what he's accomplished. Undefeated in the UFC is incredible. 15-1 is incredible. He's very fun to watch. Starts a little slower than most guys, but still, once he gets cracking, he's amazing. However, like I say, those two fights, his two latest fights, have been guys that have seen their better days. So now let's look at Aljamain Sterling. Aljamain Sterling, that Marlon Moraes loss was the one that really, really tripped him up, because he had shaken off his first two losses, Brian Caraway and Rafael Sunsal, back-to-back, and started becoming a little bit more of a killer, I remember. Let me see. He beat Augusto Mendez, and Henan Barral. And then, let's see here, he lost to Marlon Moraes in Fresno. That's right, I remember that. And that's when he said, fuck it. This was in April of 2018, and he started taking out Brett Johns, Cody Stamann, Jimmy Rivera. But then look at his last two opponents, Pedro Munhoz and Corey Sandhagen. You see what I'm saying about Faber and Aldo, Munoz and Sanhagen? He's given us more of a test of exactly how good he is at this moment than Petr Yan has. Petr Yan has been very, very impressive, but I don't know that he's been clipping anyone at the height of where they're at.
Yeah, no, that's what's going to tell us everything in this fight. It's going to be so much fun, and there's so many different scenarios of how this fight can play out. So this is definitely the main event, and then we'll get to the other two, but this is the one that I'm looking forward to the most.
And if Yan beats Sterling, then Yan's got somebody waiting in the wings that's another killer. And this is going to be good for Yan because this will make us go, whoa, we were wrong about Yan. Yeah, he kind of went on a Legends tour and did his work, but he just took out Sterling and Sanhagen. And now you almost start looking at a guy that's like starting to like wipe some cats out off the board, you know?
Mm-hmm. Those are different skill sets too.
Yeah, very different skill sets. So this is going to be good for Petr Yan, you know, but we're slow in warming up to him because, like I say, he just kind of took a different path of what we're used to seeing. So I'm taking Sterling. Who did you turn in? Yan or Sterling?
I turned in Sterling.
Sterling, yeah. So we'll see. We'll see what happens on Saturday night. But I'm very much looking forward to this fight. And like I say, it doesn't seem to bother Aljo. So I've stopped basically making the claim, this should have happened a long time ago, you know, because it's not like I'm the president of his fan club. I'm just a guy that does these rankings from week to week. So I see a chart how they move up and how they decline and how some get a second run in their career, you know, a second win. Or a third run or whatever, and then you see others where they just start. So I see the match. I see this stuff, you know, and what's right is right. I thought Sterling, I'll stick by that, should have got the shot over Petr Yan, and he didn't, but he doesn't seem as upset about it. So why should I be, you know? The fight's happening on Saturday. It's going to be a great one, man. I can't wait. This bantamweight division is so deep with talent. Young blood, veterans, legends. It's incredible. All right, Amanda Nunes versus Megan Anderson. Does this in any way, goes, make you feel like, you know, if Holm were to keep it standing, she might take out Ronda Rousey or any other time that, you know, maybe when Joanna was at an all-time high. You know, if Rose can get past this round and not let the mind games seep in, she could. Do you have any of those types of feeling? If Sarah lands that powerful right hand, GSP could be in trouble.
Not really. I mean, I hate to sound so negative in this fight, but I think some of the disadvantages that Megan has in this is like one of the big ones is speed. And I just don't know. Even power, when she hits her, like Amanda Nunes has been hit by Cyborg, you know, and she's been okay through that. So Amanda Nunes has seen a lot. She's seen great ground games. She's seen pinpoint striking with Valentina Shevchenko. She's proven to just, I think to take anybody over her at this point, you have to be foolish to do that. The one thing that I can say about Megan Anderson is her coach is incredible. But at the same time, you look at Amanda Nunes and there are no slouches over there in that corner either. So for Megan Anderson to get a victory here, it's just got to be an off night for Amanda Nunes. And the only thing I could possibly point to that is different is this is the first fight Amanda's had back since having, you know, her child who is actually out here, I believe, in Vegas. Sometimes we've had fighters say, having a baby's kind of softened me up a little bit. I don't sleep as well. That's the only thing I can possibly think of that I could sell somebody on. This is why you should take Megan Anderson.
Yeah, well, the baby was born in September, and they were supposed to fight in December. And I think those first 3 months probably fall under, like, oh, my sleep. But her partner, Nina Ansaroff, knows what a fighter goes through, and she's also her manager, and I think she would have been really good at saying, you got to sleep in the other room. You got to focus over here. I got this. You know what I mean? Because she's experienced as a fighter, and she knows how much it means to her when she can focus on the fight. And then Amanda's the go to Whole Foods, you know, the gopher, I guess, the person that makes you comfortable on fight week. But now this fight's happening in March. Hopefully by now the baby's sleeping a full night. The baby's very cute, by the way. It's popped up a few times. I've seen it, seen the baby. Now, Megan Anderson, great coverage there with Krause. Krause is going to dissect Amanda Nunes in whatever hole there may be. He's going to find it, and he's going to point Megan towards exploiting those weaknesses and maximizing her strengths. He's gone over that with us. He's very consistent and very disciplined in the way he coaches. He's made sure that the best Megan Anderson is going to show up that night. No skipping practices, pushing as hard as you can. Plus, this isn't their first camp together, so she already knows what to expect. They just took it to another level. She's also got a frame that Amanda hasn't seen. Taller, longer reach, you know what I mean? So there'll be a few things there that Amanda has yet to, I guess, experience. Now, that said, those powerful hands that she has, the speed that she has, the experience, the confidence. She's seeing the game in slow motion. No matter who you throw out there, she seems to have an answer for almost everybody. And she's the lioness. Lions protect their cubs. So she could go soft since she's had a kid. Or she could also become even more fierce. You're trying to take food out of my baby's mouth. Who knows, man? I don't have this feeling that something special may happen. I thought Holly Holm was – I remember thinking she's with a camp that's going to make her practice armbar defense, takedown defense, spacing. And I knew that Ronda needed to be exploited over five rounds. And not, I mean, Misha had pushed her to three, but she hadn't even – just getting past one was an obstacle, remember? Mm-hmm. So I knew that camp probably could devise something. What can Krause devise to hurt Amanda? I mean, back in the day we used to say, well, her cardio is not as good as others. But she seems to have answers for that as well. Can Megan basically, in close quarters, because I think that's where she wants to have the fight, in close quarters, just make it a boring fight up against the fence, put her in that tie clinch, knee her, control her with over-unders. Miocic made it a boring fight with DC by controlling him with over-unders. Next thing you know, DC would look up at the clock and is like, whoa, what happened to 5 minutes? The round just started. I got 2 minutes. He didn't have enough time to operate and get any sort of offense going because Miocic found certain ways to stall, exhaust him, you know, and just grind away, you know, at the clock. Maybe Megan Anderson. I'm picture a football game that ends 7-6. You know what I mean? Or 9-7. I made 3 field goals. You made a touchdown, but my 9 beats your 7. I don't see a very exciting fight. It's going to have to be a tactical fight to beat Amanda Nunes.
Well, when you look at Megan Anderson's strengths, right? It's the size of her, that reach. If she could pump out a jab, or even a front kick that could kind of keep her at Amanda Nunes at bay, that would be great. That's a great start. But the problem is, I don't know that Megan has the athleticism and the speed to pump that out right at the right time to stifle Amanda. She might hit her with a couple of them, but I think Amanda will just figure that out, go under it and throw over or something, you know. That's the problem, is I think Megan Anderson just lacks that athleticism.
I mentioned that the odds on the Jan and Sterling fight were a coin flip. Pick them, both -110. In this fight, Amanda's -1,000. You got to bet 1,000 to win 100 on Amanda Nunes, or 100 to win 650 on Megan Anderson. The next fight, Jan Blachowicz versus Israel Adesanya, has odds of Adesanya -230, Blachowicz +190. Before we talk about that fight, I want to ask you, which of the three champions do you think has the riskiest fight? I mean, I imagine Nunes is not going to come out of either one of our mouths, but do you think Blachowicz has a riskier fight in Adesanya, or Jan has a riskier fight in Aljamain Sterling?
I think it's Blachowicz, because Blachowicz is the bigger guy. He should win this fight. He's protecting more. If Israel Adesanya goes up in weight and loses to him, the first thing that's going to come out of his mouth is, well, what do you want from me? I'm a middleweight. You know, I went up there.
Well, that answers the question of who has more to lose, but who's more likely to lose? Are you saying it's Blachowicz?
Oh, you're saying – oh, I thought
– No, who's the riskier? Who's which is the riskier fight? You know, which champion has – Gotta be Jan, isn't it?
They're both Jans. Which one are you trying to trick me?
I mean, Adesanya is—he is fighting an undefeated fighter in Adesanya, so it's pretty risky in that, you know, and he's going to be the faster fighter, very skilled stand-up fighter. But yeah, no, I'm saying which one's the most likely to lose. I guess I should have put it that way.
I would probably say Blachowicz. I feel like Israel Adesanya has been able to solve a lot of puzzles, you know. So, and it's not like you can look at Jan Blachowicz and say, yeah, but he's been champion for years or anything like he's had his hiccups along the way. He's an older cat. So, yeah, I'd probably go with Blachowicz.
I think Peter Jan has the riskiest title defense out of all of them. I think his opponent is the most dangerous out of all of them. And why I say that is because Adesanya's moving up 20 pounds. I mean, that's you just make that up right away with just skill. I don't know. We'll see. And Blachowicz has been on fire. I mean, when he beat Reyes only had one loss. Izzy has no losses. And he's a proper light heavyweight, Dominic Reyes. I don't know. But I think I think both champs can lose for sure.
How many belts? Guess this weekend, how many belts change hands?
One. I don't think all three champs hang on to it. I think Nunes is a lock, and I think of the other two, one of the two is going to lose.
I'm going to go none. No. I'm going to go one. One. Yeah, one. Nah, you know what? Fuck. Yeah, one.
What's more likely? Two champs lose or no champs lose?
Two champs lose.
That's more likely?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, because I think one of them is going to lose. So now, and the other one's pretty competitive too. So we shall see. They weigh in tomorrow. We'll have live coverage on MMA Junkie's YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. Our subscribers count is definitely climbing. And there's definitely tons more views on a lot of the videos we put out. And so let me just give you a little breakdown of that. A lot of times when us as a staff, when we interview fighters or notables from the sport of mixed martial arts, there's usually a recap that comes along with each interview. The writer will isolate parts of the interview because sometimes they do multiple recaps on one interview. And then they'll tell the video editors, hey, see if we can cut down from the fifth to the seventh minute, and I'm going to attach that to my recap. So when you go in there and look at the stories and you see a recap of one of our interviews and you see a little 90-second block or two-minute block, that doesn't mean there wasn't more to that interview. But the whole interview is stored on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/MMAJunkieVideo. So you can see a lot of the extended work that Goz and I do with the fighters that we have on the show, but not just us, our colleagues like Danny Segura and Mike Bond and John Morgan and Nolan King and Farah Hanoun, and the list goes on and on. And the history of MMA Junkie. I mean, there's stuff in there from back in the days when we even had, you know, like Ben Folks and Fernanda Prates, Stephen Morocco. So check it out. The YouTube channel, again, is youtube.com/MMAJunkieVideo. Our weekly spinning back click is there. Our rankings report are there. Tons of interviews, and probably the best part on this is all the pre and post fight coverage on MMA Junkie. I mentioned when we started the show that we're midway through fight week. They've already had a lot of their virtual media days or their one-on-ones. All that's on Junkie, man. All that's on Junkie. The weigh-ins will be live on Junkie, and then the weigh-ins, the video highlights of that, that'll be on the YouTube channel, I should say, and then post fight. Immediately when the fights are over, head on over to the site, and as you peruse the stories, you can open up that YouTube channel and see as the fighters come in one by one, and they address their fights. Many times Dana White stops in as well, and he recaps the night of events, answers a few questions, and then he bounces. But you got to check out the YouTube channel, youtube.com/MMAJunkieVideo. Final thoughts on the fight card this weekend. We also got Dominic Cruz, Joseph Benavidez, A lot of longtime gangsters are on this card, and they're going up against young cats.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, I've gone back and forth on Dominic Cruz and Casey Kenney, the possibilities in that fight. You know, you got Joseph Benavidez and him talking about trying to figure out why I should do this. He's got a tough fight ahead of him. So this could be one of those cards where at the end of the night, actually, really, when you think about it, the whole week, because you're already down Overeem and JDS. If you're an old school fan of this sport, those two sting. And with the possibility of seeing maybe a Joseph Benavidez and Dominic Cruz not look the way they were used to seeing them, those could sting as well. So the card overall, I think, is a lot of fun. And then when you get to the three title fights, like, how can you argue that? That's going to be a lot of fun as well. Hey, do I have one second just to kind of piggyback what you were just saying?
Yeah.
So the thing about YouTube, when you go there, we don't want you to just watch the videos. Subscribe so that you know when these things come. And it's so well laid out. Cold Coffee, I got to give him his props. There's different playlists on there. So there's MMA Junkie Radio. There's even Legend to Legend, which is another thing I want to bring up. That's
Bert,
a good friend of our show. He does these interviews with legends. So far, he's done Chael Sonnen. He's done Randy Couture. And he's done Rampage Jackson. Rampage Jackson is the newer one. And that is a great interview, guys. I'm telling you, if you loved Pride back in the day, Bert sits down with them and they talk about all the stuff that went on in Pride. And Rampage is a little bit more Quentin in this interview than he is Rampage. And he really just tells you everything that he had to go through in his life and his career. So that's great. George and I here on Sportscaster, if you're listening on the podcast and you're hearing Sportscaster, what is it? What is it? What is it? Go on there, guys. Sportscaster.com/MMA Junkie. And just, you can watch our show. What you're listening right now on your podcast, you can watch us do it. You see us with our backgrounds. And when our guests come on, you see them. Just kind of how we used to do in the studio at Mandalay Bay. So you could see the video version of the show if you go there. You don't have to sign up for nothing. But if you do want to do what we're doing, you can do it in the matter of seconds. You sign up at Sportscaster and you can do your own channel. You can talk about whatever else you love in the sports world, hockey, football, baseball, whatever, all the teams. Or you can listen to other experts on those topics and just people who have passion for it. So you could definitely do that. And we also ask that when you go on Sportscaster there, you subscribe for our show too. That way you get the alerts. I'll tell you every morning who's going to be on the show, what we're going to do, if we're going to be doing watch-alongs, whatever. So you do that. And then the last one, personally, George and I, we do the Triple G show featuring Richard Hunter. Richard Hunter is a longtime friend of the show, and he does another show with us where we talk MMA, but we also do pop culture. Like just last night, we sat down, we finished up reviewing The Night Stalker on Netflix. It was the fourth episode. We went episode by episode. We've done, what was the wrestling show called, George? Do you remember?
Dark
Side of the Ring?
Dark Side of the Ring.
We'd recap those. And then we also have MMA episodes. We do polls, Patreon, or poll position. We do our stun gun segment there, our touch of glove segment. It's really, really fun. And you could sign up for as cheap as $2. So I think that's always fun. And that's www.patreon.com/triple G show, right, George?
Correct.
Yeah. Perfect. So we got a lot going on, man. And like George mentioned, there's the spinning back click segment that we love doing, rankings report, legend to legend. There's a lot of stuff. So definitely, if you're a fan of us, you're a fan of our shows, go and give them a shot. Just give it a shot, and I'm pretty sure you'll fall in love with it.
With Legend to Legend, this goes for even the hardcores. You'll hear a lot of stuff that you've never heard in other interviews because I sat through Sonnen, Couture, Rampage, all the ones that have been done. Guz definitely has as well. And I've heard stuff like, oh, wow, I didn't know that. And I know a lot about Quentin Rampage because I remember him from King of the Cage, even before Pride. And then WFA and then UFC and, you know, him being with Team Punishment and all that stuff. But, yeah, he was very, very open. And Burt Watson, former UFC site coordinator for the UFC, does a great job with those interviews. He interviews them, goes, produces them. And then our colleague, Abby Suhan, he dresses them up. And he does a fantastic job of adding B-roll, adding, you know, video highlights as they're talking so that you can see some of these old gems that come out, some of these old pics or videos that he's been able to find that accompany, you know, the actual stories that are being told within the interview. So I think it's a well-done product, and I'm hearing that it's something that's been well-received as well. So hopefully they can continue to keep cranking them out. But yeah, like Ghost said, there's just so much within MMA Junkie. Peruse the site. Check out where it says schedule. You'll see all the fight cards that are upcoming, who we know that is fighting on those cards, what channel it'll be on, what time it'll start, who's on the main card, who's on the prelims. Right next to it is results. That's what happened last week, the week before that, and the month before that, and the year before that. Everything is right there. You can source it. We have our rankings, USA Today Sports, MMA Junkie Rankings. They are, they encompass all of MMA. So you'll see where the Bellator guys or the PFL guys and gals fit amongst the UFC. The UFC no doubt houses most of the top fighters, but they don't have all the top fighters. I think most of you would agree, you know. So where do some of these other guys and gals fit? So our rankings are different from the UFC rankings. We acknowledge that Demetrius Johnson is still one of the best flyweights in the world. We acknowledge that Ryan Bader is still one of the best, you know, light heavyweights or heavyweights. I mean, he's doing it all. So you got to know that. Same with Chris Cyborg. That's just the way it is. I mean, those are what we call world rankings. So check that out. And of course, attached with that is our Facebook page. Our Instagram page, I think, is either close to a million followers. Do you know, Gus?
I don't know.
I'm going to do that real fast because I want to know, and then I want to get it right. Let's see here. That page is blowing up. It's Instagram.com/MMAJunkie.com spelled out, DOTCOM. We are at 976,000 followers, and you'll see a lot of great stuff there, videos and pics and stats and news, because let's face it, I think some people only do the gram, some people only do Facebook, some people only do Twitter, some jump around everywhere, some only do YouTube, but that's why it's our job to make you aware of everything that's going on. So check it out. All right, folks, we're going to get on out of here. Keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week and weekend. It's a huge fight week for the sport. UFC 259 has three title fights. Jan Blachowicz, the UFC light heavyweight champion, will defend against the UFC's middleweight champion, Israel Adesanya. Israel Adesanya trying to grab two belts simultaneously, like others have in the past, like current Amanda Nunes, Daniel Cormier, Henry Cejudo, Conor McGregor, holding them both at one time. That's pretty special. This will be Jan Blachowicz's first title defense, so let's see how it goes. He's been on a tear, and if he can add Israel Adesanya to the skins on his wall, like Dominic Reyes and Corey Anderson and a few others, I mean, you got to give that man his respect. Amanda Nunes, champ. She's defending her featherweight belt right now. She'll be defending it against Megan Anderson. Well-deserved contender, Megan Anderson. And this is going to be her second title defense at featherweight. She's already got five as a bantamweight. That would be seven altogether. That is legendary. That would tie Jose Aldo. And then, of course, we have Peter Yan, who will be fighting Aljamain Sterling. And he captured the title from Jose Aldo. So this will be his first title defense. And it's against a formidable number one contender. So this could really, really elevate Peter Yan. I can't wait to dive in and do the rankings. I know I got work ahead of me at pound for pound, light heavyweight, bantamweight, women's featherweight, Cruz, Benavidez. Look, this card is 15 deep. 7-5. This thing's going to start probably at 2 in the afternoon, goes. There's six fights on the early prelims, four on the ESPN prelims, and then five on the main card. Yeah. That's a long night.
I'm in.
Me too. Keep it locked on MMA Junkie, folks. We'll see you all on Monday. Go out there and be a champion.